No, I mean, sometimes people may not think that way, but we're not picking on anybody. We are recognizing that that is a crucial part of the agency's role, and they're on the cutting edge, so that's why we're doing it.
I know the whys, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The whys might sound a little combative, but it's not, because we're trying to find out, you know, why. And then I think Nancy put it best when she talked about, you know, getting them together and telling them how important they are. And, you know, we take this from a positive perspective,
right.
And then say, hey, let's see if we can, you know, make you realize, you know, how great this is, what you're doing, and, you know, to take it from there.
And the comment I have is definitely there are more vending machines braille today than there were 3 years ago. So it's not like it's all or nothing. You know, there really has been progress in most of the cases. So we'll do the status assessment and see where it's at. And also the training, I think, is a good idea. I'll bet most vendors never read the Randolph-Shepard Act, and using that as a starting point might be a real interesting training piece.
You're right.
So we can definitely work on that.
Did we vote on the motion?
We haven't yet. Is there any further discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now, specifically in writing, responding to Randy, we talked a little bit before about, doing that, and that we should, mention that we have, we've now met, we've talked about it, and this is what our next step is, and certainly to appreciate his having written, because one of the things that I really do like is when people, whether they agree or don't, when they respond. Because otherwise sometimes you put stuff out there and you think, is anybody out there? And so it's great to get a response, and I think that a lot of times these kinds of interactions are what build our history and our intent and whatever else. So,
and I think giving them a little bit of philosophy back, because they truly, some of their views is, well, I don't have any blind people, that it's a closed site, and that's their stance. Why, this is just a waste of my time, and part of the what the vendors are projecting is part of their, whether they like it or not, is part of their business, and we would rather, these are some of the positive images we want the vendors to project. And we have to keep, have a message, and keep, every time they give us their complaints, we have to listen and try and accommodate, but our core position is still the same, that this is why we think it's important. And over time, hopefully we'll win them all over, but it's, some of them, it'll take some time.
Yes, and we can probably, I'm thinking maybe we should send it to the committee as well, or is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I think short and sweet. I think it's the, I think we kind of start over. Now we just want to keep pushing the reason why we think it's important, and just keep pushing that point and try and, get them all persuaded. We need to have a dialogue with them.
They
get very, and rightfully so. They don't want pronouncements from on high. Sometimes there are pronouncements from on high, and whether you like it or not. But I think we just want to dialogue as much as possible.
Okay, so we'll write back to him, and of course, you know, we'll make sure everybody on the board, you know, and that's another one of those deals where when we get the final version, please respond.
You could probably, if we wrote the letter general enough to this, we could copy to the vending committee, because it, his, the person that responded, I mean, his view is not alone, and so our response to him is gonna be applicable to others, and so I think we should copy our response back to the vending committee.
Okay, so if we send it to you, Pearl, then you would be able to send it to the committee.
Oh, sure.
I know the committee changes from time to time, so.
Yeah, I can do that. Actually, I might, if you don't mind, just, what I typically do is whatever I send to the vending committee, I send to all the vendors.
Yeah.
Then they all get it.
Okay.
Even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so do we want to do this in our typical way of you start it and send it around, Bob, or how do we want to do it?
I'll start it and send it around, and then you change 80% of it and send it around. So I'll give you the first rough draft.
We just let them do the hard work.
Well, the thing I like really, really well is having a, you know, a skeleton thing to work with that has the main things.
Yeah, it's, yeah, the know. Second write is always easier than the first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Now we've kind of done the Committee of Blind Vendors December 2nd meeting, I think. Unless, did you have anything else, Bob?
No, I think we covered it.
Okay. And so what we'll do, I think, at this point is to have, if there's any public comment.
Is there any public?
Here. I've been sitting here while I was listening to the vendors and the machines and everything, and going, if I don't get to speak for this, I'm going to scream. I sort of want to speak maybe as a devil's advocate, only because I've worked in two businesses in the last 3 years that had general break rooms, not a vendor thing. But I can tell you that from what the two experiences I've had, most of the new machines cannot be brailled. Because, for instance, a bottle of pop machine, the guy comes, the vendor comes in, and if there's an open space, he just shoves something in there. He doesn't care what he shoves in there, but he just shoves a pop in there. And that's how he does. So every day you're going to go in there, and the Coke is going to be in a different position than it was the day before. So there's no way you can mark those machines. A candy bar machine, the same thing. If Baby Ruth doesn't sell this week, then next week they put in something else. So it's constantly changing. There's no way they can be marked.
My question is, what information does the sighted person have?
No,
they can see
what's
that it's been changed.
Yes, in fact, when I worked at West Corporation, they had to eventually, after all the they renovated the break room, they had to have a sighted person go in with me and have break with me just so they can get what I needed out of the machine.
I guess my response, and I'm kind of a radical, I guess, but my response then is that if I get the wrong thing, there should be a way for me to get my money back, mm-hmm. or that should be put in braille.
Madam Chairman.
In the other place, you know, Marriott, Rick Eggman was brailing some of the machines himself.
He did that in Hyatt too.
But it's the same thing. You go over to where the Snapple was, and each day the Raspberry Key would be in a different position.
Okay, now, you know, we've talked about these kinds of issues before. It does make a difference if the person who is filling the machines is a blind vendor or not. I mean, if it's just, you know, Coke people coming and doing their thing, or the candy bar people coming and doing their thing, then at this point, you know, we don't have as much control over that. And if we don't have places where we can send them and say, hey, this is how we'd like for it to be done, go look at so-and-so's place or whatever, then sometimes we don't get as much influence there. But with blind vendors themselves, I've talked with several people about this whole marketing thing of, if, you know, if Babe Ruth doesn't sell this week, then we'll put Butterfinger in there and we'll see how that goes. And I've had people say that they've tried both that and the thing of organizing their cart where they put their product in the same order that they put their machines, the things are in the machine. And they may have one slot where they'll try the new things or whatever, and then other slots where they use the same thing over and over. The theory of the marketers who like to change everything around is that if we don't move it around, people will come in and they'll just glance around, and if there's a place where the new stuff is, they'll only look at that or whatever, and they won't see anything else or whatever. The people I've talked to who have done it both ways say that they made about the same amount of money both ways. And so that to some degree, it's the way the individual person chooses to work it and how much they choose to have control over the product placement and inventory. And you can use the same inventory either way. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a vendor, but that's what I've been told. So some of these things are mindset differences rather than product and cost differences.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
I think to say at this point that there is no feasible way is in a certain sense taking a defeatist approach. I think what you as commissioners have laid down is a fine plan of attack, a strategy for networking with these vendors and finding out from people who have expertise in this field whether such a thing is feasible, and if so, how we can do it. And I think at this point that there's nothing else that you as commissioners or we as the public at this point can really do about it until that network and that link is established. Furthermore, I'd like to point out that it's 10 minutes to 2 o'clock.
Amen.
We have adjourned.
Yes, everything now time-wise is fictitious.
Well, I don't know if this is relative or not, but as a consumer myself, I remember at working at the hospital I worked at, there were certain vending machines that were always the same thing in the same spot every time. And yet there were other vending machines that were different every time. And obviously, none of those were by braille or by blind vendors, and none of them were braille. Got to know, this is the one that never changes. It's always the same, you know? So I know that what Barb said is right, that, you know, it's just a mindset on how they do things.
It is, yeah. They feel comfortable doing what they're doing,
yeah,
and
they
don't want to change anything. Well, my wife, she's addicted to Diet Pepsi and Diet Coke, and when we were talking the other day, and she says, I know they can be brailled because they have them brailled up with Leader Dog, and I just would walk in there and see what I want. I got it every time. So they can't, you know, they can be brailled if you adopt an attitude that can be done.
Well, I think you need to, they need to be innovative anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's
at least try it.
Try it, or yeah. You know, maybe there's an easy way to slip in cards back and forth. You know, or you decide to change or something. I know that. Maybe that uses up 5 minutes of their time, but, you know, to me, it's worth it.
I'd just like to add, I'd encourage all you commissioners to attend those meetings whenever you can. I know it often doesn't work, but if you can, you know, we'll be working on these steps, but if you're there talking to them, that, I think, would be a good thing to do.
Okay. Well, thank you, public, for commenting. We do really appreciate that. And what I neglected to say was, you know, when people speak to identify yourselves by name, we know that was Sherry Manthey and Ryan Strunk. So for purposes of people who borrow the tapes, those are who those public people were.
Sorry.
That's okay. I forgot to remind you, so that's my faux pas. Okay, we're now ready for new business. And we did the December 2nd meeting, so now we can go on to the audit report. One thing that it seemed odd to me was we have a couple of interesting commissioners. I, at least, unless Jaws was really weird, I'm Barbara J. Lose, and we have David Walla. And, you know, I don't think that's who we are. But, you know,
probably a typo.
Stranger things have happened. You know, if they want my middle initial, it's E. I think this is Daryl here.
Well, a couple of places in the report, too, seemed in further the commission board was not doing its job. In a couple of places there.
Yeah.
Say that again. I couldn't hear you, Bill.
A couple of places in the audit report seemed they seemed inferred that the Board of Commissioners was not doing its job.
I'll tell you what they think about that. You're right. That doesn't sort of infer that.
They say
so
that.
What other name was? Oh, yeah, the Daryl. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Bill, I didn't understand. What does it say?
They said the Board of Commissioners was not
that
doing
its
job.
There's an overall lack of monitoring activities of the commission by the commission board.
That's one of them.
Concerning the budget. It said that we, you know, we get updates, but we don't.
And there's something to do with timesheets, too, that...
Yeah, I'd like to run through all the specific things, just to capture the gist of each thing and address it a little bit, if that's all right. We did just receive the audit draft, and they sent it to us, telling us to read through, correct any errors, and then sign that we have it, and we stand by what's in there, you know. So, Val already did that. She caught some things. You've now caught a couple more. At a first glance, I caught another thing, but I have to read through the whole thing. And Bill Brown and Dave Robinson are both going to do the same thing, so we can hopefully catch all the errors before we sign it and say it's acceptable to us as a draft.
Yeah, I wondered about the mission statement as well.
What part page?
Because it has that, but it's different from the. It isn't the empowering blind individuals and all that. It's a thing about.
Super. Oh yeah, that's looks like from an old brochure.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. When they lived with us for about 3.5 weeks there at the and they got a lot of information from Val and Bill and Dave and some from me, and they go in and out of Bob's office. Thankfully, he was on vacation. So they set up camp there, and they'd run out and say, okay, I need something. And then, so it was kind of piecemeal, and Val and Dave in particular and Bill did a great job of, you know, whenever they popped in and needed something, they'd get it, you know. So. You know, some of those things, they probably just got old brochures or whatever. So, but actually it's good that they let us read and make corrections.
Oh boy, no kidding.
And then the organizational chart they had was an old one. Yeah. And Bill said, oh yeah, I gave them that. So, you know, it's just stuff like that. They had 7 specific items they wanted us to deal with. One is segregation of duties over fixed assets, that is needing to have at least 2 people involved in the process and 2 people when working with surplus items. Some of these are things that we're kind of learning we need to do differently still as being an independent commission. Yes.
When HHS had 20 people to do everything, and so with smaller groups of people, we have to figure out how to have segregation of duties and still get the job done. So they have some suggestions for how we can do that, and Val and Dave in particular have already kind of, well, Val and Bill have been getting that figured out, how that's going to work better. Control environment, that's the thing, making sure commissioners have access to financial issues and have the information on a regular basis. They recommended that we have as a focus topic the control environment, the financial issues, not just hearing about the budget, but more in depth of how our business office works. And I think that might be a fine thing to do time after next, if you like that idea. Mm-hmm. Really believe that any board, any governing board, should be, you know, reading every financial report, knowing what all expenditures are to be made and so on. You know, that doesn't mean it has to be that way, but according to an auditor, from the auditor's perspective, they think it should be. So that's for your consideration. Three, legislative restriction on appropriations. We, during that year, did not spend as much state money on case services as the legislation, the appropriation that year said we had to. We actually spent quite a bit more than that amount, but from federal. And Bill thought I guess there were two parts of the appropriation that required us to spend, and he was tracking the one. And so he will make sure in the future that doesn't happen again.
Now, do we have a check and balance on that? Because that looked like a check and balance issue to me in my lay role in the world.
Yeah. We have basically... he keeps track, and although I don't count the pennies to see if he's doing it right, I bring it up to him periodically to see, you know, how are we doing with our requirement to spend a certain amount of state money on case services and those kinds of things. So it's a monitoring, but obviously, you know, I didn't, and I probably wouldn't have caught it either at the time, but if at the beginning of each, whenever an appropriation is made, whether it's the regular budget session or in between, that both he and I would have the, you know, what the specific requirements are, and then each of us would track and make sure if he ended up, it's basically something gets paid, and so a portion of it is coded to state funds, the other part is coded to a particular grant. And so it's tracking in that way. So we'll be doing that. Timesheets and time certifications. It used to be that people under the workers that are within the labor contract, they always did and still do a paper timesheet for every 2-week pay period. The people that aren't under the contract, administrative staff and supervisors, did not used to do anything except when they had leave. We had a little leave slip, we'd indicate if we took some vacation or other time. But we've changed it now so that all of us who are not under the contract do a form that's called time certification, whereby we certify that indeed we did work a 40-hour week at least, and that all of the work was billed to a particular grant unless a certain amount was covered by some other grant, excuse me. And then we indicate what leave we took during that period and sign, or we send it, we always send them electronically, but by sending it from somebody's email to their supervisor for approval, and then it gets sent on to the personnel officer that basically certifies as, or serves as their signature.
Now, the business of which grant it gets taken from or whatever, that means the, whatever that,
Can I give you an example?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Mine is entirely the basic support grant. That's the main federal grant. Bob's, the majority of his salary is from the older blind grant, and then 1.5%?
$1,500.
Is from the supported employment grant. And so his little paragraph at the beginning of his form says those things.
Now it says he didn't have to know that. It somehow...
Bill made up a form.
Okay, so, yeah. All right. So Bob doesn't have to think about that every time. He just, it's on his certificate thing, form thing that he does every month, and he doesn't have to, or every 2 weeks, and he doesn't have to.
Right. Now, Carlos, now that we have the mentoring grant, a portion of his salary is paid from that. And I don't know if that changes from time to time, or I haven't noticed how yours reads.
It changes.
So he does have to pay attention to, and he verifies, I remember now, he has a separate form, the one that certifies in general, and the other one that says, this many hours was spent on the mentoring grant. And the other one, his main one probably says, everything's basic support except for whatever amount is certified on the accompanying form, something like that. So it isn't too tough, but.
Okay.
Any else on that, I guess?
And so each counselor knows what theirs comes out of,
now,
or does it still depend on, because I know there was that confusion a while back about how much time people were spending that should have been coming or could have been coming if we had it out of independent living,
right,
but wasn't because...
The main time certifications issues the auditors had was to do with the administrative staff.
Oh, okay.
Now contract staff for a long time, they've done their timesheet that shows 8 to noon and 1 to 5 type of thing each day, and 8 hours, whatever it is. And then another little sheet that says I spent 6 hours in this pay period working with an independent living person under age 55. So then Dave Robinson knows that goes to the Part B fund. I spent 20 hours working with older blind independent living clients. So we track those hours. And we've done the tracking for a long time, although we've, there's never been really enough independent living or older blind money to pay to all those hours. And most states have for years just, you know, you're out there, the counselors are out there working with people, and their time is pretty much basic support funded. And if some of it's with older, that's okay. It just kind of is a part of the whole service that we're doing. Last year, Rehab Services Administration clamped down on one state and let us all know they would be doing the same on the rest of us, that wasn't okay to be using basic support voc rehab funding to go facilitate a peer support group for older blind people. And so we've had to look at that much more carefully and actually pay for those hours from the older blind grant. In a nutshell, that's the deal. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Excuse me, and there are a lot more older blind than younger blind.
Yes, right. If I can make a comment, because we've had to dedicate more OIB money for salaries and fringe benefits, that has certainly made a difference in terms of how much money is available for other types of things. Before, a couple of years ago, you know, the budget for the OIB program included support for things like home teaching plus and grants to R2B and the VIPs and things like that. Now, with the budget as it is, you know, and this year now, we do have cash match that we can use for OIB services, whereas before, we always used in-kind match. So, a couple years ago, we had $225,000 to spend on OIB services. Because we did have enough of an increase last year, we are using cash match for OIB money, which brings it to $250,000. How much of that is salary and fringe benefits? It comes out to $220,000. What did I just say? $220,000, right. $30,000 is left over for all other types of things. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas before, 2 years ago, I think we were using something like $130,000 for staff salaries and fringe benefits, and then the remainder, up to $225,000, was used for other types of things, including grants. So you can see that even though we're not using OIB money for grants and that type of thing, it still puts because we are dedicating so much money for salary and fringe benefits, it still does not leave much room at all for decision making in terms of how you use the remaining money for pay services. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, thank you. Should I go on or anything else on that? Okay. Number five, travel and meal issues. They did random audits of various pieces of their work, and they found one staff member who stayed overnight when they were within 60 miles of their home place. Now, sometimes we do that because we have a particular meeting and we tell people to stay, you know, so it's not like they just decided to stay in a hotel that night instead of but we do need to do an official memo indicating what that event is and why they're there. So
that's I could see transportation being an issue for that kind of thing too sometimes.
Right, sure. There's a number of things that, and then meal logs, same thing when paying for meals. On this one, there was somebody who we had paid for them attending a banquet at some meeting, and they also put in for reimbursement of their meal for that evening.
Yeah. Oh.
And that's not, although, you know, there might be times when there's, not when you pay extra for the banquet, but another thing they mentioned in the report is if there was reimbursement for a meal that in fact was a part of the conference schedule, like let's say they have a continental breakfast as a part of the conference. Not everybody can function well on a continental breakfast. They need their eggs and bacon and hash browns and money, you know, so, or maybe there have been times when I've needed to have a meeting with somebody and the only time is that meal time, so you bet, you know, you go someplace else, you have your meal and then you put in for reimbursement. So when people do that, there needs to be some indication of why they did that. And then allowance policies, additional documentation needed to cross-reference as to how we determine amounts allowed for client meals and activities. We have some of that documentation, but we need to put together some policy statements that will clarify what clients can be reimbursed, the amounts and the types of activities and that sort of thing. They also had some exit comments, which are not really, you know, part of the official, but they made sure they wanted us to know they wanted to tell us these. One is the budget status review, the dispatch managements. Those are both things that are problems, but at the state level, not with our agency.
Yeah.
But because the state isn't doing them right, it affects our agency. Incorrect coding is something we really have to watch carefully. Incorrect capital asset acquisition date when we, you know, making sure we really do have a system of recording when things are acquired and the whole process of tracking those things. Deposits not timely. There was somewhere a check sat in somebody's drawer longer than it should have. We need to stay on top of that. Segregation of duties in a, really, I think in a lot of the business office functions, segregation of duties, so you can't have one person writing a purchase order, entering it, ordering the thing, and approving the whole thing, and then saying, yes, they got it. You can't have one person doing all that. And we don't, but we can fine-tune our system so it's better. Certainly better than it used to be now, but we can still fine-tune that. Incorrect payables coding, again, the coding issue. Making sure we have supporting documentation of everything. Pre-audit, which is something that now we do internally, that we have this system to do. And making sure the leave balances are correct and that sort of thing. So that's pretty much it.
My question for you is, I've been through enough special ed audits to know that who you get for the audit can make a lot of difference, the people you get.
Mm-hmm.
My question, I guess, is, you know, if they have a bad day, they can be, or some people are just grouches. how does this compare to, for instance, the last audit? Is there considerably more in here than was before, or?
Well, first let me speak to the team. They were very good. They spent part of their valuable time touring the center, which I thought was really great. And we welcomed them in the spirit of help us find the snags in our system. And they worked with us in that respect. You know, they weren't trying to catch us on things, but they were trying, they certainly, you know, made us know that they know their business and they know what they think is important. Mm-hmm. So I think it really was a pretty positive. The time spent was positive and yeah, that sounds like a lot, but of course, and it was a previous fiscal year too. Mm-hmm. It was the one ending June 30th of 05, starting July 1 of 04. So some of those things, in fact, we already have in place the thing that fixes it.
Okay.
But there were pieces of various parts that we didn't quite get, and so I found it to be real helpful.
Okay.
Yeah, they were friendly. When I was at the exit interview thing, they were friendly. That was where I learned that a warrant was a check. You know, the first time I got the warrant, I was like, whoa, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's
you know. Everywhere I go, I find out how little I know.
We have a warrant for Dr.
Pearl. That's right. That is scary, isn't it?
Well, the point directed at the commission board, I mean, so it sounds like we need to be getting a reconciliation on, you know, I don't know, quarterly basis at least, probably often enough, as to, you know, I guess just itemization, but broken down in categories as to, is something like that prepared already that we could get?
There's something that Bill does that he sends to all the supervisors, I believe once a month, that it's a number of documents. They're all spreadsheets.
Oh boy.
I know.
with the new JAWS, it's readable.
But don't JAWS 7 is the new JAWS. But,
And if it's got problems between Bill and I, we can make it better, so.
Right, thank you, Sean. You know, I would kind of think maybe as a starting place for me to every time he sends that batch of reports out, go ahead and send it to you, and you can play around with it, see if it's at all usable information. You know, you really can still run your board the way you want to run it. They think every board should also, I mean, they think every board, not just you, but should know what all expenditures were made, what all the receipts were. Well, we do a lot of purchasing. I really don't know that you want to know all that stuff, but you know, if you want to, there's nothing we're trying to hide from you, that's for sure. And we could send you what we already do monthly, and you could kind of review those and see whether you'd prefer to have some more concise quarterly report. You know, we could come up with something that would be usable information for you.
Well, I suppose one key would be, you know, the amount budgeted for a category and, you know, percentage spent, you know, in a given period, and then you know, any, I guess if there's
that's,
you know,
what we get anyway.
You would know if there's deviations, because, you know, throughout the year of the month it's budgeted, and you might spend all of it in one quarter versus equal amounts each month.
Right.
But